Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to have our annual breast cancer awareness show with two incredible beloved doctors devoted to the cause, Dr. Alfred John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, as well as Dr. Ellen Zacharis, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health. And we've done this show, I think, almost every year since I've been on air, which is going on 8 years now. And the feedback that I get from folks every year is just absolutely incredible. They so appreciate what both of these physicians bring to the table in providing the latest and greatest information about breast cancer, the challenges, treatment protocols, and alike. So both John and Ellen, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Newell.
So, Dr. Colfrey, let's start with statistics. If we could talk about nationwide as well as specifically Louisiana, that would be great. Kind of lay the landscape here as to the extent and the breadth and depth of the challenge.
Sure. You know, the data that you hear most often is that a woman has a 1 in 8 chance of developing breast cancer, so about 12.3%, which makes it one of the most common cancers. And when we look at our statistics for Louisiana, we are sort of right smack dab at the average. We're not above the average. We're not really below the average. And so we are seeing a lot of breast cancer in this state. And, you know, it's a number that has just been sort of steady the last couple of years. I think the biggest change that you're seeing, or that at least I'm seeing anecdotally in the clinic, is we're seeing a lot more younger people that are having breast cancer than we used to see 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, it's not uncommon for Dr. Zacharis and I to see, you know, women in their early 30s. Some of them have no family history. And I think you're seeing that trend also with colon cancer as well, which is why recently the screening recommendation for colon cancer has been dialed back from 50 to 45 for an average person, and with family history, 40. But anyway, I think it's just a trend, you know, across the country that we're seeing more and more cancer, especially breast cancer, in younger patients.
Doc, that's the what. That's the outcome. Do we know the why?
We really don't know the why. I mean, you know, we tell people that a lot of breast cancer risk comes from an overexposure to estrogen. So obesity is definitely a risk factor for getting breast cancer. About 80% of the breast cancers happen because there's too much estrogen. And extra fat cells manufacture extra estrogen, which is why obesity is a risk factor for developing breast cancer. So that is certainly a risk factor that we can take care of. But then there's certainly other risk factors, environmental exposures, and things that we don't really understand. You know, the air, the water, microplastics, who knows? The jury's still out on a lot of that. But our job should really be modify the things that we can take care of. You know, cardiovascular exercise, trying to stay lean, staying away from smoking, moderation of alcohol, the things that we can take care of.
It's interesting because the other day I had someone on, we were talking about child obesity rates, not only in the country, but in Louisiana. They're off the rails. So I guess if we think about what you just said, we can anticipate the next several generations of this actually increasing, where we see breast cancers being revealed at younger and younger ages.
Yeah, the obesity crisis is real, and it hits home with breast cancer as well. We see a lot of women that are postmenopausal, meaning their ovaries are no longer producing estrogen, and we give them this data. They're like, well, I don't understand. I don't make estrogen anymore, so that can't be from it. But actually, you make estrogen three places. Premenopausal women make it in their ovaries. Postmenopausal women, a little bit from the adrenal gland, but there's a lot of conversion. The fat cells actually make a precursor that gets turned into estrogen. So believe it or not, postmenopausal women are still making estrogen.
And so when we talk about, there's a big movement going on about hormone therapy. Is there a role there or a connection?
We get that question all the time. And, you know, the hormone therapy for postmenopausal women, the popularity of that right now is raging, and we're starting to learn more and more. And it used to be kind of a blanket statement that we would tell people, no hormones, bad breast cancer, you'll get it. And we've sort of, you know, the pendulum has sort of swung back the other way now. You know, now we're learning about microdosing and smaller doses of hormones and progesterone, and some of that may be safe. So that has sort of evolved into a whole nother side of women's health that is exploding all across the country now.
If we could for a moment, I'm of that age group where I don't know why, but we just have a lot of people that we know and in our families and connections, women that are being diagnosed with breast cancer. And as we go through the list, we find out that there's multiple types of breast cancers and multiple locations within the breast. Do we know exactly how many potential cancers there are out there that can impact a woman's breast?
Yeah, there are, different subtypes. I mean, that's the biggest thing currently, is that all cancers, but especially breast, no one cancer is the same. They all make little proteins that are different, so they all express different molecules that make them more aggressive, less aggressive. And honestly, the biggest fork in the road for different types comes back to hormones. Like 80% of women have the estrogen positive kind of hormone cancer, and 20% have hormone negative cancer. And so that's sort of the big fork in the road. You know, when you see a new provider with breast cancer, that's what you want to know: estrogen or not. And the estrogen knots are more aggressive, they spread quickly. Those are people that need chemotherapy, usually up front, where the estrogen positive people, estrogen type of cancer, they usually will have surgery first. So that's sort of one of the big forks in the road with different subtypes.
Is there a particular or different challenges relative to the location of the presentation of the tumor or cancer within the breast?
Yeah, location's important because, number one, when the radiologist sees a new breast cancer, how deep is it in the breast? Are they easy to get to it for a needle biopsy? Is it far to one side or not? So that makes it challenging sometimes for diagnosis. How can we actually get a piece of tissue to say cancer or not? And then, surgically speaking, location's important because what we've learned surgically is, can we hide incisions somewhere? Can we take out a little piece of tissue, hide the incision so that a woman doesn't have to be scarred and look at this for the rest of her life? Gone are the days where we just make a slash incision and remove something without really planning where the incision's placed, so that we can give women's scarless cosmetic look so they don't have to remember this every day.
And does obviously the type of cancer it impacts the how much chemotherapy and obviously radiation as well. Does the same hold true for location? And if Dr. Zacharias wants to answer that question, that would be great.
I mean, everything is important, and you know, the treatment of every woman is individualized. So if someone has a tumor in the medial aspect of their breast, it may spread to different nodal regions. And so the quadrant of the breast, you know, or if the lesion is right under the nipple, so the location, the type of cancer, you know, everything is important when it comes to surgical planning, radiation planning, chemotherapy planning.
And I know we talked about this before in previous shows, Dr. Zacharias, when relative to mammograms, I'm getting a bunch of texts, people asking, are there any shortcomings to a mammogram as it relates to a certain type of breast cancer and identification of same?
I mean, mammograms are our best machine to detect breast cancer. It's the best modality that can see calcifications. We do 3D mammos that can increase the detection rate. To answer your question, they're very, very good at picking up ductal breast cancers, but they're not as good at seeing the extent of a lobular breast cancer. So sometimes with lobular breast cancers, we'll add an MRI or other an ultrasound.
And does that deal a lot with the density of the breast? The more dense, the more difficult?
Yeah, so women that have dense breasts have a slightly higher risk of breast cancer. The more dense the breast is, the higher your risk, and we don't really know why that is. And it also makes it harder to detect a lesion on a mammogram. In general, women under 50 have much higher chances of having dense breasts. At least half of women over 40 have dense breasts. We often will use ultrasound and MRI in women with dense breasts.
Now, not to make light of it, my wife will tell me that I'm dense. So what is a dense breast? What is a dense breast? And you know my wife, Dr. Zacharias.
I do. But a lot of women also think that about their husbands. Yeah. not alone. But I think that the density described in imaging is different. It just means less fatty tissue and more of the fibrous, fibroglandular parts of the breast, more youthful breasts. You know, why we don't recommend mammograms in general in younger women in their 20s or early 30s is because their breasts are so dense that it can hide a small cancer.
And so what would the alternative be?
Ultrasound, MRI.
Okay. And Doc, as we look at surgical advances, we cover this topic as well every year. Let's start with dense versus non-dense breasts. If you could describe the difficulties from a surgical perspective.
Definitely. I mean, I did a few cases this morning, and you know, one of them had extremely dense breast tissue. And, you know, like Dr. Zacharias said, breast tissue is either just very fatty or it can be packed in very tight, rolled up tight, packed in tight, dense, nodular. And so surgically speaking, you know, I usually tell patients if the breasts are more fatty, you know, from a surgical standpoint, and pardon the expression, but it's more just like cutting through warm butter. It's very easy. It's very smooth. the denser the breast tissue is, it's packed in tight. So I feel sometimes I'm more like Barney Rubble kind of hacking away at the dense tissue. So it can make, you know, for what I do, a little more challenging. Remember, you know, two options really for women with breast cancer surgically is always, can we just remove a little piece of the breast, as I was describing earlier, try to hide the incision, make it look nice, or is the tumor so abundant that the whole breast needs to be removed? And that's a mastectomy where we remove the entire breast. You know, we advances in that have been now we can keep a lot of the skin of the breast. Sometimes we can keep the nipple, so a woman can keep her whole outer shell. And we usually make an incision way down low, remove all the breast tissue, keep the outer shell, and that allows for the reconstructive surgeons to come in and rebuild the breast right then and there at the same time.
I know that genetic testing plays a big role in a woman's decision whether or not to do, as you described first, of removing a small section of the breast as opposed to a complete mastectomy. And then if it only appears in one breast, in the decision of whether or not to remove both breasts, can you describe kind of the connection there and how that process actually works and how you advise patients?
About 10 years or so ago, it was very challenging to get genetic testing on patients. You know, the insurance companies were really squeezing the providers, and you had to fit these extremely rigid criteria to get genetic testing. I mean, it was a whole flow sheet that you had to have up and go through. You had to have either three relatives or one relative less than 45. And some, I mean, they made it so hard. And then a lot of these oncologic cancer societies got together and was basically like, this is malarkey. Like, we're not testing enough people. And so now really the guidelines are, if you have any family history of breast cancer in your family, it doesn't matter what age, doesn't matter what type, none of that matters. They recommend family members getting genetic testing. And so now the insurance companies have loosened their grip a bit on this. And so it's become easier to order the test on people. So, you know, every time this year, we always tell people, and Dr. Zacharias and I see people in the clinic all the time, and they're like, oh, it's, you know, kind of taboo. We don't like to talk about our family history. It's amazing how much I still see this. But the one thing at this time of year, we always tell people, ask your aunts, ask your cousins, ask your grandparents. You want to know. If there's any family history, we like to know, because you can have the genetic test and find out if you actually have the gene that could give you very dangerous breast cancer and kill you. And so now we can identify that gene, those genes. And if you have one of them, sometimes people elect to either watch their breasts closer with imaging, or they elect to remove the breast in a preventative fashion and have it rebuilt.
So statistically, how much does it increase the likelihood if you have one or maybe more than one of those genes? Or is it possible to have more than one of the genes?
Yeah, I mean, if you have the BRCA gene, which everyone kind of knows about from Angelina Jolie, the chance of you getting breast cancer can be as high as 80%.
Oh, wow.
And the problem with those people is that not only do they get breast cancer, but they get the bad kind that I was talking about earlier, estrogen negative. They get the very aggressive kind more than the average person that gets breast cancer. It is possible to have more than one gene deformity mutation. It doesn't happen often, but, you know, we're really looking for a couple of the big guns, and, you know, two of them are the BRCA gene for sure.
So when we talk about, we touched on surgical advances of nipple sparing mastectomy, as well as using a woman's own tissue for reconstruction. I know that I've been reading about these significant advances that have been in that area. So when we come back out of the break, let's start there. And if folks have any questions, please text it in to 504-260-1870 or give us a call. We'll try and get your questions answered with Dr. John Colfrey and Dr. Ellen Zacharias of LCMC Health. We'll be right back, folks.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. This is our annual breast cancer awareness show with Dr. Alfred John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, and Dr. Ellen Zachris, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health. And a couple of questions. One caller calls in and asks, if my wife and my daughter have the BRCA gene, should my son be tested?
Ooh, such a good question. 100%. Son needs to be tested. The gene can get passed down to females or males, and males can get some more frequent more frequent cancers with the BRCA gene. And more importantly, that male could pass it down to their children too. So everybody needs to be tested.
Another question is, if you have dense breasts, do you always have dense breasts, or can the breast change?
I usually tell our patients with dense breasts that as you age, the breasts will typically get more fatty replaced and less dense. But there are some people where breast density runs in the family sometimes, and we will see that pattern persist as they age. So it could kind of go either way, but most people's breasts as they age should improve and get less dense.
So let's talk about surgical advances, nipple sparing, mastectomy, and utilizing a woman's own tissue for reconstruction. And what should women consider in trying to decide if this is the way they want to go?
And Newell, I tell you, I love New Orleans. I think this is the best city ever. I love it here. And I tell you, we are actually lucky that we live in this city for many reasons, obviously. But from a breast cancer standpoint, people don't realize this, but a lot of the pioneers of what goes on with breast care, breast surgery, from mastectomies, people like Alan Stolyer, who's a legend in this town for breast cancer surgery, helped develop all these techniques like nipple-sparing mastectomies. And also the pioneers plastic surgery-wise, where a woman can take their own fatty, warm living tissue and sculpt it into a new breast. All of that was worked out here. The anatomy of it was all worked out here. And so this is actually a pretty good city to have breast cancer in, because the removal techniques are advanced compared to other places. The reconstructive techniques are advanced compared to other places. And so, you know, nowadays when a woman has the ability to use their own tissue to recreate a warm living breast, in my opinion, I think it's definitely a better option than just placing an implant. And I would encourage patients, you know, this a lot of times with breast cancer, we see people and they rush to make a decision. And don't get me wrong, a decision needs to be made in a timely fashion. But I always tell people, make sure that you've gotten an opinion, that you've really dug in and looked around at what can be done. because a lot of times people will just rush. They'll make a rush decision. They'll have an implant thrown in, and it's the wrong decision. And, you know, at a lot of places now, we can use their own tissue to recreate a more warm living environment that the breast feels more lifelike.
When you say the wrong decision, what does that mean?
Well, I think, you know, there's some people, and again, having any cancer is extremely stressful. Obviously, breast cancer, very stressful. And people just say, I want to take it out immediately and get this out of me and cut them both off and move on and put whatever in, I don't care. And then all of a sudden on the back end, they start learning, well, I could have done something different, or I could have kept my nipple, or I could have kept more skin, or I could have used my tummy fat to make a new breast. So, you know, really being an advocate for yourself and knowing the lay of the land before you just make a stressful, unresearched decision.
So is there a higher probability of recurrence if you're using your own tissue as opposed to lab-created tissue? I don't know if that's the right terminology, but
great question. So, you know, whether we bring up some of the abdominal tummy fat and make a new breast out of it, or whether you put an implant in, the recurrence rate should be 2-5%, no matter which option you choose.
Yeah. So, no, little to no difference then.
Exactly.
Statistically.
Correct. Statistically, no difference.
That's interesting. Let's go to Liv on line one in Kent. Or Liv, you have Dr. Colfrey and Dr. Zachris on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, I am a 6-year breast cancer survivor, and I'm doing great. I've got breast cancer when I was 53, almost 54. It was estrogen positive stage one. I did opt to go to the Center for Restorative Breast Surgery with the best of the best, the surgeons you guys mentioned, and I did the deep flap surgery. So, and I'm doing great. So, two things. I was a person who had estrogen positive breast cancer, and I know my reoccurrence rate is very low. I actually am going to oncology appointment today. So, I do have two daughters. They're in their 20s. But I have a mother who never had breast cancer. She's living. She's 80. A sister who's never had it. No one else in my family. Just wondering about reoccurrence rates for someone like me. And then also, there's so much about the estrogen and people taking estrogen, and it's causing people to get breast cancer. So I just kind of wanted to follow up with that. Is that, and I don't take estrogen anymore. I won't. I was taking it when I was diagnosed. And I did use the tamoxifen, and then once I was in menopause, the other hormone blocker. And now I'm completely off of both. So just wondering what the research is saying about reoccurrence rates for somebody like myself. I did not have chemotherapy or radiation. It wasn't recommended for me. Wasn't recommended.
Doc?
Yeah, these are great questions. So recurrence rate, especially if you took the hormone blocker pill, if you look at the literature, should be only 2-5%. For people that have had bilateral mastectomies, you typically do not need any breast imaging again. You do need a good physical exam once a year. Genetic testing for your family, it should start with you. So as long as you had a genetic test that was negative, then your children are okay, as long as your husband's side doesn't have a family history. But they like you to start with the index patient that had the breast cancer rather than just testing both your daughters. So it would be, if you were tested, then they're okay. If not, you should get tested just for their sake.
So, Doc, when you just mentioned the husband's side of the family, which is there one side that contributes to a higher probability than the other?
No, 50-50, either
wow.
way.
Really?
Yes.
In your practice and Dr. Zachris as well, I mean, do people realize that? Because I think, you know, a lot of the stories that I hear, we're kind of checking just our our mother's side of the family.
Go ahead, Ellie. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people realize and some don't, and that's why we're on your show every year. I mean, education is everything. And I love what Dr. Colfrey said about knowing your family history, because a lot of people don't talk about it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I did not realize that both sides, the husband and the wife, 50-50. I mean, I always hear people talking about on my mother's side. I don't know why. Probably because, when you think of breast cancer, the first thing that comes to mind are females. But obviously, you're seeing an occurrence rate now amongst males that, I guess, is it rising?
Well, I think it's more just that I wouldn't say the male breast cancer rate's rising, but it's just more that the males can sort of silently pass it on to their offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And the males may never get breast cancer, but they just sort of silently pass the gene on to their daughter, and then all of a sudden the daughter pops up with it.
Yeah. Dr. Zacharias, I understand that there are new techniques relative to radiation. I know we touched on some of that last year. Tell us about what's happening in that area.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief because radiation has become so much more precise in 2025. I mean, every year we see advances in technology, both in targeting tumors and protecting normal tissues. So we're using deep inspiration breath hold, we're using more precise image guidance, we're using shorter courses of radiation, fewer visits that have the same effectiveness, which really has improved quality of life for our patients. We're using more partial breast radiation to limit side effects. We're using AI. We have auto contouring. We use more automated planning to shorten the time for a woman to start her treatment. It also standardized quality. We're treating oligometastatic disease in women with very limited metastatic disease. We're treating those areas, and we're seeing higher...
That would be the lymph nodes, more likely than not?
To lymph nodes, but also to even spread to the bones or the liver or the lung. In women with very limited metastatic disease, we're finding that if we treat those areas with targeted radiation that sometimes we call SABR or SBRT, which is a stereotactic ablative radiation therapy, we're seeing better local control. We're delaying the time that a woman needs chemotherapy. So all this, I mean, our planning systems and linear accelerators are more sophisticated. They shape and modulate doses so precisely that we're really able to cure more patients and minimize the effects to healthy tissue. So all this just means better outcomes for our women.
When we talk about local control, I guess one of the downsides to radiation is that it can kill skin cells, right? I mean, you have an area adjacent to where you're targeting that you may have to go back in and have surgery to remove the impact of the radiation.
That's very, very rare that we see that.
Okay.
Because we're able to target cancers more precisely, there is less dose to the skin.
Oh, okay.
But in some women with breast cancer, we elect to treat the skin because that's an area where sometimes we'll see recurrence depending on the breast cancer. So not if we're treating lung cancer or colon cancer, we don't treat the skin.
I guess I'm using skin in a general sense as opposed to the fat tissue within the breast as well. It's still rare.
It's very, very rare.
Okay.
The radiation is done correctly in today's day and age, but Dr. Colfrey would need to go in and do surgery to fix a radiation damage.
All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Dr. Alfred John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, and Dr. Ellen Zachris, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health. We'll be right back, folks. We'll talk about immunotherapy and new medicines and advances in chemotherapy, a vaccine, and just mindful meditation for healing. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Dr. Alfred John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, and Dr. Ellen Zachris, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health as well, for our breast cancer awareness show. And on the text line, Doc, they asked, what about implants after a total mastectomy? Do they cause problems? Do they have any stats on recurrence?
Yeah, recurrence is the same, and the new implants are manufactured differently. They don't rupture as easily. They don't need to be changed out as frequently. They're engineered better, and they're built to last more than implants were, you know, 20 years ago.
So I know most people don't spend a lot of time talking about the mental side of this, right? And I got to imagine it's huge.
Newell, this is huge. I mean, we're so good at telling people, go have this surgery, take this medicine, do this radiation, take this other pill, come see me then, come see me here, go there. But we do a bad job arming people with ammunition to calm down their mind when at 2 a.m. it's up going zing, zing, zing. And so, you know, we have started incorporating this in our practice. Called mindfulness meditation for stress reduction. And a guy up in Massachusetts by the name of Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's pretty famous in the meditation community, has a whole program for his cancer patients, and they train them on this and how to take time every day to learn how to meditate, to calm their mind. And we need to start doing this more to help arm these patients with their own ability to help calm themselves as much as we can when that stressful light bulb goes off at 2 a.m. or 6 a.m. to be able to have them slow down, work on their breathing, be mindful, stay present. It's so important for all of us, honestly, but especially for people that are going through a stressful health event like cancer.
Yeah, and Dr. Zachris, I guess, you know, y'all, both of you are exposed to the worry, right, that people have, the uncertainty.
Yeah, absolutely. And to echo what Dr. Colfrey just said, there's more and more out about mindfulness, and we have patients that practice it when they are actually getting radiation, because everyone's afraid of radiation, afraid of the unknown, afraid of side effects.
And recurrence.
Afraid of recurrence, absolutely. So it's a very simple practice and something that's part of our breast cancer program.
Real quick, Dr. Colfrey, the fear of recurrence, statistically, is there something to drive your decision one way or the other, or is it just maybe more about your own behavioral traits and the way that you process, you deal with that information, that you can find a comfort level choosing one path or another path as it relates to treatment?
Right. I think, you know, we worry more recurrences in people that have the more aggressive kind. So some of the estrogen negative cancers we worry about more. You know, the patient that called in earlier, we don't worry about her as much because she's hormone positive. She took her medicine. She should do pretty well. We certainly worry more about people that had a more pervasive, larger cancer, you know, higher chance of that recurring. So again, like we said earlier, all of that goes into the decision making on individualized care and how we look for recurrences.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you folks that I'm a big believer in what you talked about with mindfulness meditation for healing. I involve myself in something called creative relaxation. Dr. Debbie Bright, who is a U.S. Olympic diver, brought that about, and big believer in that, and it really helps when you're dealing with trauma, tragedy, and just the day-to-day stress of life, right? And that mental component, we always underestimate it, but the reality is it has a significant impact on our lives just daily. To both of y'all, I cannot thank you enough. I know y'all are incredibly busy. I always look forward to this segment. Dr. Alfred John Colfrey, breast surgical oncologist at LCMC Health, and Dr. Ellen Zacharis, radiation oncologist at LCMC Health. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Noel.
Thank you, folks. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 coming up in the next hour. We will have the two candidates in the District A race, Holly Friedman and Amy McCarron. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.